Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Craft of the Draft podcast. And I finally got the visual right this week because I messed up last week. The week before was out of our control, but I apologize. We're back and you can see us visually now. But as usual, start with the question, bit of CTR to get through, and we'll get to our statement makers for the girls at the end. But you've got a question this week, so hit me and tell me what it is.
Yeah, I do have a question. I watched an absolute thriller on Sunday morning at Avalon Airport Oval between the Eastern Rangers and the Western Jets. Eastern getting it done on the siren, big Illaroo Smith kicking it from 55, and Geordie Hyder shepherded it through on the goal line. An unlikely suspect to shepherd it through. He's obviously only 170 centimetres, but he's very strong pound for pound. Now, my question to you is, if you could have anyone in the CTL shepherd it through on the goal line, who are you picking? And why?
Well, I had a bit of trouble with this because you could pick anyone, and Jordan Hyde is a very unassuming player to do that. I had two Sandy Dragons in mind, and it was hard kind of going through each team, and I had Harry Oliver as one.
Okay.
Now, no real reason. I just think he's a very reliable player. So when it comes down to like someone who is unassuming to do that type of thing, it's probably him. He'll probably just be there because he knows his football pretty well, just defensively accountable.
Mm-hmm.
Or Adrian Cole, but okay. Naturally defensive, but he doesn't usually lose out on his battles. I know that's not really a contest of any sort, but reliable at the very least, and that was what I was looking for, and that's what I backed in the end.
I've gone for two big rucks. I would go either Lucas Impey, who's actually opposed to Illaroo Smith on the day, and we will have a chat about that battle and a bit more about that match later in the podcast, but he's one who's very physical, very strong, very commanding, and, you know, if you caught one-on-one with him, you'd struggle, I'd think. And the other one I'd go with is Zach Harding, another sort of country-hardened footballer who used to going up against the big bodies, and that's his real point of difference. So they're the two that I've gone with, but we'll get into the analysis side of things. We've got a full round of CTL boys, full round of CTL girls to look at. And then we're also going to do our statement makers in the girls, our best 22 to start the season. We did it with the boys a few weeks ago, and we're going to do it with the girls now that they've played a bit more footy. But we start with the CTL boys, and we go down to Launceston for the first game. Tassie taking on Dandenong, the only game on Saturday. And Tassie got it done pretty convincingly in the end. I watched this one on stream by 50 points. But yeah, Dandenong were on the back foot for most of the day. Tassie had the territory, but there were a few stingrays which I'll run through first. I was really impressed by in the back line. Kane Hurst continues to put a case forward to be a lockdown defender in that Vic Country lineup. He's so strong one-on-one and again showed it. He spent some time on Lenny Douglas. Although Lenny Douglas finished with the three goals, I think two of them were in the last quarter, so it kept him relatively quiet, and I'd say he split the honours, if not won that battle. I didn't watch the last quarter. I watched the first three, so I don't know if they were on each other in the last quarter. I do acknowledge that. Charlie Orchard was also really strong, particularly early in the game with his spoiling and his defensive presence. And I thought Rayak Andrew played a really good game, probably as well as I've seen him play since that breakout game of sorts last year against Gippsland in the wildcard round. So that were the three stingrays that really stood out in the back line.
Run me through a few Tassie boys, and I'll ask you about Oscar Van Dam, and we know the storyline of him, that he didn't get picked up last year but was kind of always in talks and went back to the TSL State League, played pretty well there, has come back in to the Devils and got put in the midfield, where see if that translates. How'd he go? And obviously run me through the other Devils that played a good role as well.
I think the other thing to touch on with Oscar Van Dam is he got midfield minutes in the best team in the TSL in North Launceston, so it's not just playing for any old team. He was excellent at stoppages. I thought he was really clean, showed his burst of speed, and got plenty of the footy as well. And when he wasn't winning the footy, he had defensive presence and recognised when it was time to defend. He laid a few tackles. I'm not sure of the stats, but it would have been 7 or 8, I would have thought, at least. Geordie Payne was really impactful at stoppage as well. He had his moments there, looking to play him a bit more through the midfield as they look to show his versatility ahead of the mid-season draft. And yeah, some other Tassie Devils. I thought Max Roney was just about best on ground for them, sweeping across half-back every time Dandenong looked to go forward. Noah Hibbins-Hargreaves was a forward that was very good for them. But other than that, Max Roney was a real rock for the Devils. Harry Elmer was quite good. And Dan Cooney was athletic and crafty. And it's the second week in a row that he's had some really nice moments. As a forward like him, you've got to be able to take your opportunities. And he certainly does that.
Yeah, well, Tassie tracking along pretty well, actually. Like, they're sitting with 12 points. So 3 wins, tracking on pretty well.
And could easily have beaten Oakley, who were reasonably at full strength.
So they're not doing too bad. And we'll move to Brisbane and Calder, who, Calder, not a fun trip for them for either side, but they went down by 44 points, 88 to 44. I'll run through a few quickly. Ryanair, 24 touches and 7 rebound 50. So continues to provide a bit of reliability out of the D50 and show he's still capable of putting himself forward. Ryan Brody, 6 rebound 50s. On the score sheet, I mean, Harry Ryan had 2 goals from 4 touches. So you want to talk about efficiency.
He's that sort of player as well. He's the sort of player who takes his opportunities, and he's very athletic, and you notice him every time he gets the ball.
Yeah, well, besides that, a pretty even day across the board, to be honest. No real standouts when it comes to stats-wise. But Calder will look to bounce back in the next week. I'll move to the Rebels and Gippy now. Now, the Rebels got their first win of the season, which is great to see. And, they really did just kind of take control, especially in that second quarter, and put the game to bed. And Gippy kind of came back, but...
So we talk about Ollie Hannaford and Harry Charlson every week. They're really reliable for them, and I think you said they were again. But if you could, I guess, look beyond them a little bit, who were some other Rebels that stood out? Obviously, it's a collective effort to get the 4 points.
Yeah, well, Mitch Lloyd was the one that I think has to be mentioned, and he's been a name that's always kind of been talked about. But I think this is probably his breakout performance of sorts in terms of defensive efforts that were so crucial. Had a hold in the ball in D50 that, easily stops a shot at goal at the very least. Really good contested work in the air, I thought. Just took a few good intercept marks and really shut down a lot of opportunities that Gippy had, because I reckon, I haven't looked at the team stats, but I reckon Gippy did have more of the inside 50 entries. It was just really crucial. I mean, a few times where he had just that last man in defense to make sure ball wasn't rolling through for a goal, really. Just really neat defensive work, I thought.
And he's run probably on the fringe of Vic Country, so that'll do his confidence no harm whatsoever. Was there anyone else from the Rebels?
I mean, your typical performance from Ollie Hannaford, really. Like, just two-way running, provides the energy, that second effort. Floyd Burmeister was pretty good. I mean, I thought he did too much at times, and I say that he's quite tall and not as agile as someone who's probably about 5 or 6 centimetres shorter and probably ran himself into a bit of trouble trying to do a bit too much with it. Hmm. But otherwise, his leading patterns are quite effective. Like, the Rebels know how to find him, and he's got quite good hands, so was pretty impressed with the way he went about it and kicked 3 goals in the end.
Yeah, very good. And be interesting to see how that GWV forward line functions later in the season when they have Jonty Fall and Floyd Burmeister up there. No doubt that'll help his footy. From a Gippsland perspective, I know they were really happy with Jesse Craven, an overager who's come back this year, really consistent, really good on the wing. And you know what you're going to get from him. He's really competitive and ran out the game really well. Xavier Lindsay played another game that we're so accustomed to seeing from him in the midfield. And it was Jaiers, another overager's first game back from hamstring injury. He'll be no doubt better for the run. What did you see, Nathan, and who impressed you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, easy with Lindsay. He just does it so well each time. And he was really good at the start in terms of just providing that real quick offensive presence and lowering his eyes like he's so good at. That vision is second to none on the field. And he did that later when the power were coming back a bit in the third quarter. Just tried to provide a bit of flair, and they were struggling with that. And once he started going, others get along, and he sets a standard. He's one that you notice the shift in momentum because of him sometimes. And it was terrific again. Ricky Mentha went off with a bit of an ankle injury. I think it was the second quarter. It could have been the first quarter even.
We're told that one's a minor one, so maybe miss a week and come back. Tom Hanley, I think he said you were pretty impressed with what he's able to provide. They're trying to expose him a bit more up forward. We know what he can do in the midfield, and his finishing polish is improving up there.
Yeah, well, I thought it was his almost moments that actually lifted the side as well, that he had a lot of aerial presence that I thought went really unrewarded, and he got himself in the right spots but just wasn't able to capitalize on those moments. But I do think in the end he was rewarded with a few goals, but just kept providing spark, constant work ethic throughout the game, didn't go unnoticed, and shame he probably didn't get more of it than he deserved in the end, but he was pretty good. And I'll just touch on Harry Charlson, for the Rebels, back to the Rebels quickly. I thought he was really good especially in the first half, just his run and carry and ability to move it forward was just constantly moving and providing that presence. So Yeah, read the ruck craft really well as well. His stoppage craft was up there for one of his best performances this season. So, yeah, good to see the Rebels get on the board and still a long way to go, and they'll get some good players back as well.
Yeah, Geelong had a disappointing loss to the Gold Coast.
No, they won.
Oh, did they win,
Geelong,
did they?
Geelong.
Why did I have in my head that they lost?
The girls lost. The boys won.
Yeah.
Yeah, the boys won by... Oh, you're going to cop it from the Geelong boys. Geelong won by 7, 72-65.
Yeah, right. Okay, I had that one wrong. I do know that Noah Tullio played well in that one. And, yeah, we know what he's able to provide in terms of his cleanliness. And Joe Pike was really good in the ruck as well. We know he's been really working on his ability to, you know, get involved around the ground. There's been some different areas that people have talked about with him. He's certainly one who covers the ground a lot better this season. I think that's been really noticeable, and yeah, his follow-up work on the weekend was really good.
Suns were up by 18 in the end of the third quarter. Maybe that's what you saw, and maybe that's what you thought happened there.
Yeah, I'm not sure where that got stuck in my head, but that's okay. We apologise for that, and we move on. The other boys game,
Bendigo Northern.
Bendigo Northern, and you watched this one. Northern obviously getting the job done, and it's Bendigo's first loss of the season. Yep. Their first game against a Metro side, so a really good test for them. We'll start with the Northern boys. Riley Ormerod, obviously the storyline, kicking 6 goals.
Yeah, well, it was an absolute day out if you were a tall and small forward, which could have been all their forwards really. But I like I say that in Stumpf and Sims had their days out, and also, you know, Gresham, Ormerod just had their days out. Like, Bendigo really struggled to shut them down. It was just their lively presence. You couldn't shut them down. Like, real typical small forward behaviour where they're just kind of, they're always at the drop of the ball, reading it so well. And he was really getting rewarded for his work. And it was the tackle pressure as well from the smalls that I thought really stood out. Just to collectively, they all kind of came together and set a goal and really did work for him. And yeah, like I touched on, Tom Sims was creating separation left, right and centre from his direct opponent and found himself, I reckon from the goals he kicked, they were all uncontested marks. And that's just testament to his body work inside forward 50. He just knows how to get himself free and doesn't have to work hard for it in that sense when it comes inside 50. So, yeah, really, really neat performances from their forwards.
Tyson Gresham won as well. I know you touched on him, but yeah, he really impressed from what I've heard. So yeah, no, it's good to see him doing some really good things. On a Bendigo point of view, I think Jobe Shanahan's first half was one you were really big on.
Yeah, well, look, I've been quite harsh of Jobe's performance, and I was pretty open about that in his second academy game, and I thought his second efforts were poor up the ground, and that was the truth. But he's definitely been very good since then. Like, I got to give it to him. He was definitely best on ground come half time. His second efforts, his body positioning, he was just working so hard in every contest to win the ball. I think he finished with 3-3 from memory. But
yeah, 4 marks as well.
Yeah, I think one was rushed. So it was probably like they were all very good kicks. But like, you know, if you just got touch on the line, things like that. But yeah, love the way he went about it. Just real pressure acts from a key forward that you like to see. And
yeah,
I mean, you see that in the AFL now, like where that separation is. You see key forwards who are just so lazy defensively. For him to staple that now, it looks so good, and it really did show.
I think James Barrett's one who's very good at and aggressive at ground level. They're missing him this week just with a minor injury. Expect him to be back when they next play in a couple of weeks against the Rangers. But yeah, for him to step up in Barrett's absence from a defensive point of view, really important. Toby Trevallia, 31-2, a pretty looking stats line.
Yeah, it was a pretty looking stats line. I did think he had a poorer first quarter for his standards, kicking-wise. I thought he was a bit sloppy, but he did definitely fix that up in the second half. Kind of went back to his real offensive, hard-hitting style where he just loves to move it forward, generate some drive. It was a lot cleaner and then got rewarded up forward with, I think, one goal was from a free kick and the other was from just a good position inside forward 50 and got on the end of 2. So, yeah, a neat stats line and some good and bad in that game, but you know, it's a good-looking stats line for anyone, though, isn't it?
And Archer Daywick's worth touching on, rolled his ankle, so he went off during the third quarter, which is unfortunate for him. He just can't catch a break with injury or illness or anything like that. So hopefully it's nothing too serious for him. Does that just about wrap that game up?
Oh, I mean, have to just touch on Zach Johnson and, you know, typical cleanliness. And Liam Farrell was good as well, I thought.
Good to see him back it up as well,
A few good goals and just worked himself well inside 50. And, yeah, they, like I said, they all worked pretty well with each other and they all benefited from it in the end. So, yeah, good win from Northern.
Murray got the job done, 11-15-81 to 9-5-59 over the Oakley Chargers. Jagger Smith, you know, performed as we expect him to do. So that was really good to see. Isaiah Markovsky is one who was very good as well for them. And then Lucas Tovey down back is starting to really build into some nice form. And Luke Quainer, we know what he can do defensively. He showed that again on the day and got a fair bit of the footy as well. Colin Paul played that breakout game last week, backed it up with 21-1. So that was good to see. And Alex Swinnerton, who you talked about with his pressure, I think last week got a fair bit more of the footy and was prominent for them when they went forward. So
Joe Berry, 4 goals
good
as
to
well.
See. Him going well. Yeah, Joe Berry with 4 goals. So, yeah, you think he's just about a lock for that starting Vic Country lineup now. It's hard to think of, you know, 3 or 4 small forwards in Vic Country that are better than him. It's hard to think of one that's better than him in Vic Country. So, yeah, he's one to watch. And Will McCarthy's one we put on the map in pre-season on the wing, 17 disposals. So, good to see that from him.
Yeah. So, we move now to the last game, Western Eastern. So, you were at this one and how the dramatic ends. I did turn on for when you're like, you know, this is 84-81 with whatever, and it was like neither team wanted to win it, honestly.
I have to talk about the finish, because at the 18-minute mark, I think Tom McGuan put them in front, and I thought this is the big storyline. You know, the Collingwood father-son has won the game for Western. They're going to defend. They're going to hold on. And then Eastern get a goal back via Josh Smiley, and you think the storyline's going to be Josh Smiley, you know, absolutely dominates, kicks another one of those goals from stoppage. And then I think it was Javen Tanner for Western, and it looked like the storyline was going to be, you know, a no-name wins it for Western and someone who's really...
Oh, God, that's harsh.
That's harsh, but someone that people aren't as aware of, and you know, is someone, and I mean that in the most endearing way possible, like he's able to build his reputation off this, and hopefully it propels him into some really good form. And then the storyline becomes Ilaru Smith, who plays his best game for the season. His ruckcraft was sensational. He got it to his teammates' advantage. He got a really crucial hit out to advantage to Josh Smiley earlier in the last quarter. And then, he was the one from 60 who finished it off. So, and his aggression, it was easily his best game that I've seen him play. I think he only was credited with 4 marks. At least 3 of them would have had to have been contested. So, it was a real presence around the ground. Got himself into some really smart positions as well. So, I really liked his game. And if there was one player to finish it off, then, it was probably him.
Well, you watched this game from a different lens this time. So you looked at a few players and did a bit of a, you know, player focus in that sense on a few. So you've told me who I'm going to ask you about.
Yep.
I'm going to run through a few of these boys and you're going to give me a different insight because, you know, obviously the games we watch, we just kind of give our general thoughts, but you've zoned in on a few boys.
So one quarter. For everyone, so I've watched Jack Ryan closely in the first quarter, Cooper Trembath and Remy McLean in the second quarter, Xavier Kadachi in the third quarter, and Lockie MacArthur in the fourth quarter.
So we'll start with Jack Ryan.
Yeah.
Tell me about his running patterns and generally how he found the footy.
Yeah, so his running patterns, I'll start with his running patterns. I thought they were really, really smart. So corridor bias was what I noticed. He was running up and down the corridor. And what that meant was, A, he wasn't having to run as far. It's not like he was running on an arc. He was running in the quickest way possible to get to the line of the footy. And B, it meant that when he got the footy, he was getting it in dangerous positions and he was able to really set his teammates up. The other thing about his running patterns that was really impressive was that he timed his run when he was getting to the fall of the ball at a marking contest really well. So he was getting there with some speed, he was getting there at the right time, and then when he was clean, he had some velocity and it was very hard to pin him down. Having said that, when he was pressured and he was tackled, he was able to stand up in the tackle. We know he's played some senior footy for Wiri Yellick, and that really showed because he is able to still dispose of the footy. The change of direction stuff from him as well was really good, and I thought that was a result of him being really light on his feet. So he found a fair bit of the footy in the first quarter, 6 or 7 touches, and he spent 22 minutes and 45 seconds on the ground. In terms of how he found the footy, it was his ability to present high and continue to offer tick leads, offer leads, and get in the corridor, like I said. And not only that, but also when he did make an error, there was one time where he turned it over, but his body language to stay involved, get involved at the next contest, allowed him to cause another turnover, and then he got it in the middle of the ground and was able to release a teammate. So a really selfless game from him, and I really liked what I saw because he was always able to get into dangerous positions and was very smart.
Cooper Trenbarth had the one-on-one with Keaton Matafai-Forbes, and tell me a bit about his marking capacity in the end. That would have been a fun matchup to watch.
Yeah, it was a fun matchup to watch. Unfortunately, I think the quarter that I watched closely of Cooper Trenbarth was probably his least productive quarter. He was very good throughout the game. He took 8 marks. A lot of those would have been intercepts, particularly in the second half, as we're used to seeing from him. In the second quarter, though, he was a little bit quieter. Keaton Matafai-Forbes took a couple of marks on him, but what Cooper Trenbarth did really well is he never let Keaton Matafai-Forbes get goal side of him, and that meant that Keaton Matafai-Forbes, yes, we know he's got a long boot, but he was kicking from 45-50 out, so it's a lower percentage shot than it getting over the back. He was, however, giving him a fair bit of room, and that allowed him to take uncontested marks and get those set shots. I think he kicked 1-1 from those set shots from memory, his direct opponent. And what the other thing that I noticed that he did really well was at times Keaton Matafai-Forbes got sucked into a contest. Cooper Trenbarth held out, and then that allowed him to get involved on offense. That happened twice in the quarter, and he also laid a smother as a result of him holding out. And he was also in a position where if Western had got the ball, he was going to be able to apply pressure, whereas Keaton Matafai-Forbes sort of got himself in no man's land. So that's what I noticed from a positive point of view of Cooper Trenbarth.
Switch to the other end of the field, and I want you to talk about this matchup and then the defender himself, Remy McLean and Lachie MacArthur. So tell me about Remy McLean's ability to move around his opponent, present a lead, and the battle with Almack in the end, and then touch on Almack and his performance and, you know, what he did without the footy in the last quarter.
Yeah. So I'll start with Remy McLean. I thought what was really impressive, I watched Remy McLean's second quarter, so his ability to move his direct opponent, and it was often Lachie MacArthur, it wasn't always Lachie MacArthur, but his ability to move him around was really impressive. And there was one time late in the second quarter where it was really evident he had back shoulder on Lachie MacArthur, so he was at the back and the ball favoured Lachie MacArthur, but he was able to work his way around his opponent. Now, he wasn't able to take the mark, but his ability to have the strength to work his way around and get to front position was really good when the ball wasn't kicked to his advantage. He took 2 really impressive marks in that second quarter, kicked the 2 behinds, but those 2 marks came in different ways. One was a hit-up lead, your general hit-up lead, and the other showed his acceleration and ability to get separation on the opponent. So I thought that was really, really impressive. As for the battle with Lachie MacArthur, he did himself a lot of favours because he's clearly got predictable leading patterns, and that's really obvious when you watch him. You know where he's going to go, and it's also really obvious because Josh Smiley and Christian Moraes both targeted him multiple times. He was never outmarked when I was watching in that quarter, and they put it to space. They put it where he wanted it. They knew where he wanted it because they know how he plays because he's very predictable. In terms of Lachie MacArthur, in the last quarter, he had 3 touches. Unfortunately, 2 of the 3 were turnovers, and one of them did lead to a goal. So that's an area that he'll be disappointed with. But what he did without the footy was really important. So he was a spare man behind the footy, and he positioned himself really smartly, which prevented Easton from just hat-kicking it forward because he would have intercept marked. Now, he didn't get the opportunity to do that because Easton were able to chain it out via hands and they didn't go for that option, but he certainly closed it down with his smart positioning. Yes, that's obviously a coaching move to have a spare behind the ball, but it's incumbent on the player to get to the right positions, and he did it really well. His ability to read the ball early allowed him to split a couple of really good one-on-one contests, and his follow-up was really good as well. So I thought what he did without the footy and in a high-pressure, high-stakes last 7 or 8 minutes, he had some really important efforts. I really liked what I saw from him.
Last one, Xavier Cardarchi. Matched up on, you know, Easton's best midfielder at most those stoppages. So tell me about his involvement around the ground throughout the day and, yeah, that midfield craft he provided.
Yeah, so I watched his third quarter really closely. There were 9 centre bounces in that third quarter. There were lots of goals kicked. He went to 7 of them. The 2 he didn't go to, he was playing forward, and he's still learning that forward craft, and that was really obvious. But of the 7 centre bounces that he went to, for 6 of them, he was matched up on the best midfielder in there. And 4 of those, I believe, were Josh Smiley, and 2 of those were Cody Anderson. Josh Smiley was off the ground when Cody Anderson was the best midfielder in there. So he's clearly the one that Western look at as being the big body in there and having the most responsibility to do a role defensively. Yes, there are a couple of centre clearances to his direct opponent, but that's part and parcel of it when you're playing on Josh Smiley and, you know, you've got Ilero Smith having the game of his life. They're going to connect. And I thought other than those 2 times where they did connect, he did really well. He won a couple of centre clearances himself. He used his acceleration. His first couple of steps were really impressive when he did win centre clearance, and his stoppage craft was really good as well. in terms of his involvement around the ground. He was able to work forward and present. He was unused, but he was still presenting an option, which was really good. It shows the increased fitness that we talk about, or we have heard Trent Dennis-Lane and others talk about. And he was able to go back as well. There are a couple of times where he made a couple of little errors, but was then able to mop up. It's a little bit similar to what I was saying with Jack Ryan. His ability to stay involved in the contest and not worry about what's just happened was what allowed him to thrive.
Great wrap up. We will be trying to do that where we can throughout the season, and there'll be select games throughout the year we will do that. But yeah, good first one to have a look at.
Just a couple of other players from that game I just want to touch on. Jack Baldwin's kicking I thought was really good and as good as I've seen it this year. Luca Grego played an excellent first half. Tom McGuan was very good and very smart as well. So I just wanted to touch on those three players. I thought they had excellent games.
Quickly run through the ladder for the boys before we move to the girls. Sandy, Geelong, Northern, East and Bendigo all sit on 16 points. Some have played more games than others. Tassie, Murray, Gippy, Calder on 12, Dandenong on 8 and Western Rebels and Oakley on 4 points. So Sandy still lead the competition. Move now into the girls and their week.
Yep.
And we'll start with the poorer performances and where there wasn't as much happening. Calder went down to the Lions, like I said, a pretty unhappy weekend. Unhappy weekend of travel for them. They lost 75-7, but yeah, Chloe Baker West, she could probably walk into an AFLW club right now. 42 touches in the end, 4 inside 50s, 9 rebound 50s, 5 tackles. I mean, a really massive stat line for her.
Yeah, a couple of others that Calder really liked in trying conditions. Ali Spagan competed really hard in the ruck throughout the day and really impressive with what she was able to provide around the ground, ability to get to lots of contests. And Eden Grant on debut was one who, I guess it's worth highlighting the difficulty or the strangeness of playing a debut game in a different state. A lot of the girls, their first time ever playing in a different state, and they've played plenty of Coates League footy, so to do it on debut is a different challenge in itself. And she was one who was really impressive. She's tall, so she's going to take time to develop, but she had some really impressive aerial moments, worked hard defensively, and a couple of really important goal line spoils.
Move to the next one. Oakley 130 beat Murray 10. Look, I mean, it's hard to take a lot out of these games, but you have to mention Maggie Marnie in the performance she had with 37 touches, 4 goals, 14 tackles, 10 inside 50s. I mean, that is a stat line and a half.
Yep.
And yeah, we did get message from one that why wasn't she in our stats?
Yep.
Well, we have to submit this to our graphic person quite early and this wasn't up yet. So I do apologize, but that is quite the stat line for her. I'm not going to mention others. That's in a game like that.
Yep.
It is just not a lot to really take out of it.
Yep.
Yeah, that was a full strength Oakley team. That's full on. Move now to Gippy and GWV. Gippy got the job done 47-9. That's a pretty good win for Gippy.
And I spoke to Gippy today and they were at pains to say that the scoreline did not reflect the evenness of the battle. It was just the inside 50 efficiency, which was the difference. I think both teams had the same number of inside 50s, which was more of an indication of how it went. It was up and back all day, really competitive. And GWV fought really hard. From a Gippy perspective, Alice Stoddart was one who was typically dominant, as was Ash Centre and Jazz Soudan, but worth touching on the fact that she played off half forward. She's usually a rebounding half back, but she provided a lot of energy, a lot of meters gained off that half forward position. She's just playing there for her development. I've also been really impressed with Maya Cristani and Zari Burns' development in the ruck. They've developed so much in the last 5 or 6 weeks, and that was really showing on the weekend. Zali Gallagher was hard at it and has had a very good block of form, and it really culminated on the weekend. Abby Hobson wasn't as dominant aerially, but still hardly lost a one-on-one contest. She's so important for them inside 50. And Lily Layton's sort of a speedy impact player who's coming on really impressively as well.
Isabel Davies for the Rebels again, 27 touches, kicked their only goal, which is weird because she's not a forward. And she's kicked, she's actually kicked some goals this season. 8 tackles, consistently provides that pressure. But a great runner, and we know how good she is of an athlete. And Emily Lane with 26 touches. Another good performance from her. Next one we'll move to is the Geelong girls. They went down to Gold Coast, absolutely stacked academy, 85-16, which, expected. They're very, very good.
Yeah.
Gold Coast girls. A few to touch on. Hayley Peck again, 15 touches. So she's still producing some pretty good stat lines and still ticks along really well. I mean, Sarah Helly got kept to 14 touches, so
yeah,
must have had a very good direct opponent to be kept to that. Stella Huxtable, 22 touches, 3 inside 50s, was their leading disposal getter in the end for the Falcons. Which game next? We'll leave Western Sandy till the end. You did a player focus in that one. We'll go to Tassie and Dandenong now. And this is quite a good win for Dandenong. I think it sets them, you know, if we were to do our country power rankings, you'd put them above Tassie now, and we'd probably have Tassie around.
Tassie have started the season really well. Yeah, there's no doubt about it. But a lot of their players were kept quiet on the day. Lucy Thompson was one who cracked in hard, and when she wasn't winning the footy, she was applying a lot of pressure. So that was good for them. From a Dandenong perspective, Kate Terry continues her strong form. 30 touches, so a midfielder who defensively applies herself and is able to win clearances as well. So that was very good to see. Nalu Brothwell was another who was really impressive. Obviously, she plays up forward for them and her twin sister plays off half back. And then Zoe Basanko, a really good performance as a forward ruck, a really balanced performance. She won a lot of her own footy. She more than held her own. She certainly won when she went into the ruck as well. Talia Black was very good in the ruck as well and has shown what she can do as a really physical, competitive type of ruck.
Lucy Thompson and Meg Harrison for Tassie, tackle pressure-wise, really up there. Lucy had 12. Meg Harrison had 9 in the end, so you got to reward those players when you play in a style like that. And one who's been playing some really consistent footy, Priya Bowery, and she had 19 touches again, 4 tackles, 3 inside 50s. Yep. So some really consistent performers for Tassie. But, like I said, that's a big win for Dandenong. Yep. They probably established themselves as a top country team. That's your top two right there in terms of country. Bendigo and Northern. Now, this is a big result for Northern as much as it is Bendigo because to say that Bendigo would have, you know, they've played 3 Metro teams and won 2 of them. And that's a massive. I looked at the Worm. They conceded with 30 seconds left on a dodgy looking free kick, I must add, that from what looked like it on stream. But Northern got up by 4 points. Do you want to start on who do you want to do for this one?
I'll let you start with Northern.
Well, Northern, Zoe Hargreaves, 27 touches in the end, 10 marks, just super productive on both ends, 4 inside 50s and 5 rebound 50s. And Holly Ridewood, 7 inside 50s as well. She's had a stellar start to the year and that continues. It was, I thought it was Zoe's sister who kicked the winning goal, but it was not. It was Kira Lemire. She kicked the winning goal. She had 2 goals in the end. She's kicked a goal in the last 3 games. So Those were the top performers for Northern.
Yeah.
Bendigo. So I caught you off guard there. I didn't realise you didn't have your...
No, that's fine. No. Lou Painter is one who has certainly, you know, we've known about her reputation for the last 12 to 15 months. So it's good to see her producing and not only producing, but able to produce some consistent footy now for the season. She's averaging 25.8 disposals and she's played Talent League footy since 2021, and that's a career high for her. Jamaica Douglas is one that you've tracked along quite closely, and she was quite good on the day as well. And then in the ruck, it was a really interesting battle between Sienna Hobbs and, from a Northern perspective, Isabella Hishongwa-Gibbs. So that would have been a nice one to watch and a good opportunity for development for the bottom-aged Northern ruck there. So, they were the main performers. Obviously, you've talked a fair bit on this podcast about Gabby Drage, and she's probably had a really strong start to the season, kicked a couple of goals again.
Yeah.
But we'll move to the Sandringham versus Western game now. Sandringham getting it done 8-4-52 to 3-4-22 against the Jets. I thought the Jets were really competitive in this game. I don't think the scoreline really reflects that. But Sandy kicked 5 goals in the last quarter, which, probably let the game, not do justice to how close it was, or certainly not the scoreboard.
It was actually 22-21 with 13 minutes remaining. So they just literally went on a run. I'll quickly say a few, Sandy, before I ask you about Western, but Mizulinski, 3 goals again, keeps racking it up and good to see that she's consistently performing because she has had her injury woes. Yeah. Jess Thomas with 2 goals and from 9 touches, pretty productive. Scout Howden, 24 touches and a goal. Love watching her play footy. And Sophie Mackay, 27 touches.
Sophie Mackay was clearly the best for Sandy with her ability to win clearances. It was a typical performance from her. And behind her, I would have said that Daisy Flockhart was the next best. Yeah. Only the 14 touches, but a really confident performance. Yeah. And when she got the footy, you knew about it because she did something really impressive with it. So I liked what I saw from her. From a Jets perspective, I'm going to park Sierra Greaves because I watched her first quarter really closely, and we'll talk about that in a sec. But Lulu Field behind the footy was one who took some really important marks, and I really liked what she did. Alex McBride alone is a really highly regarded bottom major, and she used her body and her physicality and her height really well at stoppage, or her size really well at stoppage. So I was really impressed with what she did as well. They were probably the main ones from a Western Jets perspective.
Yeah, so tell me about Sierra Greaves, and the question is, how did she find space and her general disposal efficiency from what you saw? What was it like? And yeah, give me a better insight into what she does so well and stands out in this Jets team every week.
Yeah, absolutely. So she had 9 disposals, I believe, in the first quarter, I counted. And her ability to get in and out of traffic is set up by her ability to take lots of small early steps when she sees and recognizes she's about to win the footy, and then accelerate away. So that's how she's able to get in and out of traffic. By taking small steps, it allows her to sort of elude opponents, burst away, and that acceleration off the mark is something else that's really impressive. She's really clean off the ruck's hands. It's very rare that you see her fumble, and that also, you know, is a factor. It doesn't slow her down. The ball handling skills, she's really clean at ground level, and she is also aware of when she's not in a position to win the footy and will apply pressure. She laid 2 really big tackles in that first quarter, and they were follow-up efforts, one tackle after the other. And I think that shows her defensive application and is a really critical part of her game as well. She averaged a fair few tackles for the season. And yeah, so it's not just the ball winning for her, but it's also the tackling. She missed 2 targets in that first quarter by foot. That was probably the only blemish on what she did, but they were both when she was running at full speed. So obviously that's arguably the hardest skill in footy, is hitting a target when you're running at full speed. And she did provide that overlap and that drive, and we know how important territory can be in the girls' game. She was certainly one who was willing to gain meters when she did find open space. And I guess the other thing I want to touch on with her is her running patterns and where she looked to find the footy when she was presenting, when there was some uncontested footy and some uncontested marks being taken in Western's defensive 50. She's always looking to open up the attacking side of the ground, because she knows she's got the speed and if she's got the space to work into, then she's willing to drive her legs and bang it forward. So I was really, really keen on what she provided in that first quarter in particular, and she was able to continue it throughout the entire day.
Quick run through the ladder, and then we'll go to our tips for next round for girls and boys. Oakley Northern on top with 16. Tassie, Gippy, Bendigo, Sandy, Dandy and Eastern all on 12. Geelong on 8. Rebels on 4. And Western, Calder and Murray still looking for their first win. Girls tips, Oakley, well, I'm leading 56 to 53 in total, and that 3-point lead is in the boys. We are level in the girls, so that's where we sit at the moment. Oakley and Western on Saturday afternoon.
Are we starting with the boys?
Girls.
Girls. Girls. I'll go Oakley in this one.
Oakley as well. Calder and Gold Coast.
Gold Coast.
Gold Coast for me. Rebels and Northern at Mars.
Northern.
Northern as well. These two just played, didn't they? They just played about 3 weeks ago whenever at PCO. That's so weird. Dandy in Brisbane.
I'll go Dandenong in this one.
Dandenong as well. Geelong and Gippy.
Geelong, but not by as much as you might expect.
Yeah, I'd say the same. Geelong and Tassie and Eastern to round it out.
Eastern.
I reckon Tassie will respond. I'm going to say Tassie, home ground advantage. I know they just got beaten there, but I don't know. Back them in. Quickly move to the boys. Sandy and Sydney.
Sandy.
Sandy as well. Dandenong and Brisbane.
Dandenong.
Dandenong as well. Tassie and Eastern.
Eastern.
Tassie. Calder and Gold Coast.
That's an upset. Who and Gold Coast, sorry?
Calder and Gold Coast.
I'll tip the Suns Academy.
Suns Academy as well. And Rebels and Western.
Yeah, Rebels.
Western.
And I have to say, the Western Jets have only got that one win for the season over the Northern Territory Academy. But they're always losing by 2 goals, 1 goal. So they've been very competitive. So a lot of credit to their program.
All right, girls statement makers. So if you watched how we did this with the boys, we both have our own teams, and then you'll see a magical cut, and we will come back and have
a combined team,
which is what you'll see on our socials as well.
Yep.
We'll go through line by line.
Yep.
We'll kind of, expand on a few, but we're just going to kind of give our basic explanations. I'll start with the fullback line.
Yep.
My only 07,
yep.
Jordan Allen. I think she has to be in there. She's so consistent and reliable. And in terms of someone you want tactically in your team, I think she's deservedly put in there as the 07. Kate Terry from the Dandenong Stingrays. Just caught my eye in the preseason, and she's been extremely consistent since then with her kicking, and Holly Ridewood from the Northern Knights.
Yeah, okay. So you've put a couple of – you've gone very midfield heavy, clearly. I've gone at fullback Zara Neweth as an 07 born, her ability to shut down. She's done it on a couple of players. I think, Zoe Bisanko is one she did it on, and also Georgie Brisbane, if I remember correctly. Bala Davies has had some good form for the GWV Rebels, and Charlotte Brewer as well for the Oakley Chargers.
Next line up, Maddie Ibrahim from the Murray Bush Rangers, Millie Lane from the Rebels, and Lulu Field from the Western Jets.
Yeah. For me, I've got Alice Stoddart as that rebounding, driving halfback. She's been sensational to start the season, carries on her form from the end of last season. Millie Lang as well as that intercepting presence. She was outstanding against Gippsland on the weekend. And Sarah Pousty, so tough.
In the middle, now I feel like an All-Australian selector putting players where they not really are, but some are.
Yep.
Scout Howden on one of the wins.
Yep.
Sierra Greaves right in that middle. And then I've got Gemma Reynolds on the other one, but, you know,
I've got Nikita Harris from the Stingrays on one of the wings. Her ability to apply defensive pressure and know that role is really impressive. She's got a great aerobic capacity. I've gone Kate Terry in the middle position for what she's provided as a hard at it midfielder, and Lucy Marishuk on one of the other wings. Her running and her speed is really impressive.
First forward line, I've got Emma McDonald. Picked up where she's left off, really. Yep. Ava Reid from the Tassie Devils really plays above her size and does it so well as a consistent goal kicker. And then Claire Marnie from the GW Rebels.
Yep. I've gone Claire Marnie from the Rebels as well at centre half forward. Then I've also gone Emily Gladman. I've liked what I've seen from her. I feel like she's becoming more consistent, which we need to see. And Sasha White is that high connecting type.
The last forward line, I've got Gladman as well. Gabby Drage. She's out of the pocket, and then Mia Zielinski as a 19-year-old in there, but I think she's leading the goal kickers, I'm pretty sure, and been super consistent for the Dragons, so she's at my full forward.
Yeah, I've got Kiara Woods at full forward from the Geelong Falcons. She's had a super start to the season. Certainly that round one performance was outstanding. Then she played VFLW, but yeah, her glimpses are top end. And she's coming off injury, so certainly a statement maker because not many people are aware of what she does. Ava Reid and Gabby Drade, you've touched on.
On the bench, Sarah Howley.
With Mitch Ruck, Ruck Rover. Rovers, yep.
Oh, yeah, sorry, my bad. I do have that here. Hayley Peck,
yep.
Shalon, Lou Painter from the Pios, and then if you don't have Ash Centra, I'll really question how you can't have Ash Centra in it.
I've got Hayley Peck from for same reasons, really good follow-up, etc. Then I've also got Sierra Greaves from the Western Jets. I don't think anyone expected her to start quite as well as she has. She has been excellent. And then Maggie Marnie from the Oakley Chargers. I think everyone knew that Centra was going to dominate this season, so I don't know if she's made a statement.
I don't know. I agree. I just think those stat lines, who can expect stat lines like that, to be honest? Like, that's unbelievable. Like,
it is, yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, yeah, but I agree.
Your interchange?
Sarah Howley, Jemiah Bresson, Jazz Soudan, Zoe Hargreaves.
And I've gone with Misha Barwin from the Tassie Devils has been really impressive to start the season. Jazz Soudan as well. Evie Parker on a wing has shown excellent improvement from the Eastern Rangers. And then the other one that I've gone with is Jazz Soudan, Misha Barwin, Evie Parker. Oh, and then Talia Black from the Dandenong Stingrays as a secondary ruck.
We're back now. We've finished our full team. We've combined it and made it one statement 22, which you will be able to see on our socials from tomorrow night. We will be posting the graphic of that. So I'll start. Fullback, Isabella Davies, Zara Neweth, and Charlotte Brewer.
Zara Neweth, the only bottom major we've included in this team. Centre half back, Lulu Field, Millie Lang, and Sarah Pousty.
In the centre, Scout Howden, Sierra Greaves, and Evie Parker.
Centre half forward, Emma McDonald, Claire Marnie, and Sasha White.
This feels very official, like we've properly selected a squad. Full forward, Emily Gladman, Kiara Woods and Ava Reid.
The followers, Hayley Peck, Lou Painter and Maggie Marnie. Hayley Peck, I think off the top of my head, is the only overager in there.
Possibly, yeah, she is. And then on the bench, Gabby Drage, Kate Terry, Ash Centra and Jazz Soudan. So this team can obviously change in a couple weeks, however long until we do the next one. So that's our first statement 22. And obviously we had some others that didn't make the final 22, but yeah, definitely deserved the mention there in the way they've performed this season. But that is all for this episode. Hope you enjoyed. I think next week is just strictly talent league reviews. There's actually not anything else to talk about. The girls' trials are in at the start of June for Metro and Country, so things coming up there, and then the national champs of the boys are there as well. So coming up to that real exciting time of the year. Thank you all for watching. Check out our socials for a lot more, and we'll see you in the next episode.